Hi, this is Joe Patty. Thanks for listening to WRTI Online. This service is made possible through the support of WRTI's members. You can become a member, too. Since you're already online, just visit www.wrti.org and click the Become a Member link on the upper left corner of the webpage. You can also join us by phone at 1-866-809-9784. Your membership will help keep WRTI's broadcast and online services strong. And again, thank you. Now, on with the show.
There's a great deal of exciting music happening everywhere during the summer season in Santa Fe. The Opera Company and the Chamber Music Festival offer a feast hard to resist for the music lover. Our WRTI Travel Club tasted some of the goodies on our recent trip, and I had the pleasure of speaking with two of the major participants in both festivals.
Hello, I'm here today speaking to you from glorious Santa Fe, New Mexico, where the summer music season is in full swing. We have two guests today. Desiree Mays, author and lecturer and radio personality, and Steve Ovitsky, executive director of the Santa Fe Chamber Music Festival. And welcome to you both.
Hello, Joe.
Great to meet you. Great to meet you.
Wonderful to be here, and what a connection, and what an exciting time for me. It's my first time in Santa Fe, and we've had some wonderful experiences. I'm sure you're used to hearing about the weather in connection with music. Desiree.
Well, this is, we've been in a major drought, but that all changed when you arrived.
Well, of
we're
course.
Now in what we call our monsoon time, so yes, we are getting rain, fairly fierce rain occasionally, but it doesn't interfere with anything here.
This Not is... only doesn't it interfere, but I must say that we saw Salome the other night, and the lighting was perfect. I think you must have a connection to
we
someone
do.
Upstairs. I have never had such an experience with
John,
the lightning.
John Crosby, the general director of the Santa Fe Opera, who is no longer with us now, is definitely up there. And Salome and Strauss are the operas that he really gets involved in. It was quite extraordinary. There was an hour of 40 minutes of a light show from lightning and thunder and no real rain, which was nice.
And the timing of it for the arias or whatever was going on, it was conducted from above.
Mozart does that too. It makes it very hard for the percussion and the to keep up with that, but it was spectacular.
It really was spectacular. Yeah. Of course, the performance was marvelous as well.
And our theatre, of course, which is an open theatre, but since the theatre was redone like a few years ago, you don't get wet anymore in the theatre.
Yes.
So the sides and the back are open, so it's quite stunning. The performances start just before sunset, so as the light fades, you go from sunset into night light, into blackness with the occasional thunderstorm. So it makes it a very rich experience. This theater up on the hill is so unique, and this has been a wonderful season. It's our 50th anniversary birthday season.
Yes, it's
a big event.
And a lot has happened, though, since the beginning. I do remember the very beginnings of Santa Fe. I guess I'm dating myself, but it, of course, now is a much bigger event. It was rather spare in the beginning, and I think they were the first to really blaze the way for summer.
For the performing arts, yes. Of course, there were artists and painters here for many years, and when John Crosby came in 1957, he found there was a gap where music was concerned, and now we probably have, I would think, the richest music summer festival in the entire country. Don't you agree, Steve?
Well, I think so. After there's so much to do, and actually we know some people who attend a chamber music festival concert at 6 o'clock, have a bite of dinner between 8 and 8:30, and get to the opera at 9 o'clock for a start, and they do this all summer.
Now, Steve, how long does the Chamber Music Festival run?
We run about 6 weeks, and during that period we have about 45 concerts.
You program that well in advance, I guess?
Well, Mark Nykrug is our artistic director, and the programming is done about 18 months in advance. We pride ourselves in programming more in advance than just about any other summer festival, to the point where we're able to announce next season while people are here visiting for this season.
And what musicians do you draw upon? Are they local? Are they...
No, that's why you need to do it in advance. These are high-profile performers.
It's very high-profile. We bring in about 80 musicians from all over the world that then form ensembles while they're here and play mixed chamber music concerts in the evenings and at noon. We also bring in some of the world's finest string quartets every year as well to form a core for each week. But for example, our violinist this year, and this is just an example of some of the people that actually your listeners will be hearing as our festival is being broadcast on WRTI, Pinchas Zuckerman, Bill Prusel, who's the concertmaster of the Cleveland Orchestra, Jennifer Gilbert, who's a concertmaster of an orchestra in France, many, many others, Suvin Kim, Benny Kim, Daniel Kolakoff, all very fine violinists. Pianists this year include Yefim Bronfman, Jonathan Biss, Gary Grafman, Benjamin Hochman, Jeffrey Kahane, and the wonderful young Philadelphia resident Yu Jia Wang.
Yes, and of course, Suvin, I know very, very well. We just did a show on him as well. It intrigues me. The quartets, of course, are used to playing together, but when you get the musicians together who don't really play together, what happens? And when do they come together here in Santa Fe?
They meet here in Santa Fe. They begin rehearsing. They have very intense rehearsal periods before the concerts. And sometimes they're performing with one of the string quartets. Last week we had a guitarist performing with the Quarteto Casals from Barcelona. The guitarist was a regular festival musician. And other times members of quartets will break up and play with other wind or other string players for larger ensembles.
So the season again is how long?
We started this year on the 16th of July. We're finishing on the 21st of August.
And you'll be hearing them on WRTI.
That's right. And all of these festival summers run simultaneously, which seems unbelievable. I mean, this is a small city up here in the desert, and the opera runs, the chamber music festival, there's the Santa Fe Desert Chorale, and there's the magnificent Maria Benitez, who is
She's absolutely breathtaking.
Isn't she amazing? Yes.
Breathtaking.
Flamenco.
Flamenco, yes. Uh-huh. We saw her last night. Actually, she did a retrospective of her work, and of course, she's danced with some of the greats, and it was really quite thrilling.
Right.
But Desiree, you are a lecturer, you're an author, you've written 7 volumes.
Opera Unveiled.
And can you unveil a little bit about the opera?
Well, this came about because I'm the storyteller lecturer for the Santa Fe Opera and have been for 10 years now. And I must say, I do have the opera company here to thank for the career that I've had, because I lecture all over the world now on opera. I tell stories. My other gig is probably the Met. I spend a lot of time there in the winter season, just here in the summer. And what happened with the books was simple. I was giving my talks, and people wanted copies of my notes, which are very scruffy notes. So the little voice said to me, there's maybe a book here. And this was 8 years ago. So I produce a book each year on the 5 operas of the Santa Fe season. So there's sort of an odd choice of 5 operas, but that's why. They're not specifically about Santa Fe production, however, because when I go to press with my book, the directors have really not decided quite what they're going to be doing. I try to make these operas accessible and conversational. I cannot do a musicological interpretation in a book because you need to hear the music. And it's all about the music. So I look at more of the human aspects of the stories. We can relate to these stories. There are only a few good stories out there, Jill. You know, the Greeks got most of them.
Yeah, and really the books are kind of corny, as we say. But actually, I have to tell you that Salome the other night was absolutely breathtaking. I love, also you have the libretto in English. It's an electronic libretto that you have, which really, really helps a great
deal in the house. Yes, when the Metropolitan Opera was the first opera company to have the titles on the back of the seat in front of you, and we are the second. We pride ourselves that with the little problems they have, we find out. So you can follow the opera in English or Spanish, or you can turn it off. And it's always interesting to me, we thought everybody needed the crutch of a libretto in front of them. They really don't. And when you know that opera, and I think with all opera, you need to have an idea of the story and a sense of the music, listen to it before you ever get there. The stories are complex enough. You shouldn't have to fight the story. So there you are. It's there if you need it. But once you're familiar with the opera, turn it off. Listen to the music. The music tells you everything you need to know.
Yes. to a degree. I really have to say that it was enhanced for me. I listen to a lot of music, as you well know, and I love Strauss. And I must say that this was a magical experience for me. Of course, aside from the lighting, the performance was excellent. Also, the staging was very interesting and did not take away from the opera itself. It was very, very... It was very natural.
Simple. And Bruce Donnell is a great, the director is a great admirer of, an interpreter of Richard Strauss, and he wanted to do it as Strauss wanted it, simply. The turbulence of that story is in the music. It should not be overdone as a concept opera. So they kept it very simple with a great circular disc that's a Roman mosaic on which the whole thing happens. The costumes are all the costumes of the period, and then you can focus on the singing and the music and the drama from that point of view. And I think Janice Watson did a wonderful
fabulous job.
Greer Grimsley is quite an extraordinary Flanahan.
It was a very, very exciting thing. And for people who are, I mean, we have opera lovers that listen to the station, and then we have people that are really opera buffs. I mean, they know what's going on. And I must say that for me, once again, I'm a musician and I have been exposed to music all my life and I love all kinds. But this was very, very special. Coming here to Santa Fe really kind of changed my life in a way. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you're used to hearing that because people come here and they move here, I think.
People
that's what I've heard.
People come and fall in love and move, right?
Yes.
Well, I came here for a job, so I'm one of the few that came here.
How long have you been here, Steve?
2.5 years.
I see. And where are you from?
I am from Chicago, but I was director of the Grant Park Festival in Chicago for 12 seasons, and then I worked for the Minnesota Orchestra, and I was president of the Milwaukee Symphony for a number of years.
Yes. So you're well acquainted with what's going on in the music world.
Absolutely.
And in the symphonic world, which is rather devastating because the orchestras are having trouble. No matter how good they are, the great ones are having a lot of trouble. I don't know about opera. I think opera has, years ago, people said, well, opera really doesn't pull an audience. Opera is the highest rated thing now.
That's
opera
right.
Audience.
You were talking before about the supertitles or subtitles on the back of the seats. When they first started doing that above the stage, calling them supertitles, that brought more people into opera who never came before because they were afraid of hearing something in a foreign language.
It took the threat out of it.
It really did, and it made people willing to say, I'll go there, I'll understand what's happening. Mm-hmm. And then when they hear the music and see the spectacle, they start coming back.
It's absolutely true. And the funny part is, I have found, although I understand, and I'm very grateful that it's in English, I know the opera in the language that it was written in. And of course, music, I really believe that the music is written to go with the language. I feel that very, very strongly.
Oh, I think we should not be translating our opera.
No,
the word amore in Italian,
yes,
that's three syllables. It's going to be
it's quite different musically,
which is a little sad.
And then, exactly, I think people know the Puccini arias with the Italian, you know, but it certainly does put it into perspective. So you feel that you're getting the wealth of what was written with the language it was written in. Plus, you know what's going on, and you really do appreciate so much more the music and also the action.
And I think even if an opera is in English, you cannot really follow it line by line as the singer sings it, because sometimes it's very difficult when they're up in the higher areas to be able to understand. You're also trying to, I term this as make it an intellectual exercise, you're trying to follow with your head. You should really turn that off and just let the music speak. And with the titles, you can do both. It works really well. You get the maximum.
You really do get the subtleties that you would not get. I'm sure you hear the audience. It's very interesting when you sit there and suddenly you hear the audience respond to perhaps a joke or some turn of a phrase, which they never would respond to if they didn't know what
jokes are a problem for the singers, because the singers will sing the line in whatever language they're singing it, the audience reads it and then laughs, so there's a nasty little time lag from the time they didn't sing the line to when the audience read, and that can throw them a little bit, and after a while I suppose you get into a tutorial.
Well, I certainly recommend coming to Santa Fe for a lot of reasons, and I certainly put music at the top. Now, Desiree, you also have a show on radio. You have
Yes, I have a public radio show here called Center Stage, and I do what you do.
Yes.
We interview visiting artists from the worlds of the visual and the performing arts. I'm really interested in people's creative process, and Steve and I know have talked on our program. What is it about? How do you do what you do and why do you do it? What is the process by which you present a chamber music festival in the summer? And with artists, of course, it's marvelous. We can take a piece of music and go through the artist's interpretation or talk about the piece itself. I'm really fascinated by the creative process.
I was wondering about repertoire. I guess, Steve, you kind of answered me. I suppose there are certain things, there are certain limitations, and when you get together and you put people together, of course, there are certain works that have to be played.
Well, actually, what happens with our festival is that our artistic director, Mark Nykrug, will decide certain works that he really wants to have in the season. Then we assemble musicians who will play them. Other times, we want certain musicians, and we talk to them about what they might be interested in performing in. But basically, Mark takes a view of integrating an entire season with repertoire that works. So, for example, one of the concerts this season, which is a season that honors Mozart and Shostakovich, includes a piece that you'd rarely ever hear, the Masonic Funeral Music of Mozart, which takes about 25 musicians. And we have a number of musicians from the Santa Fe Opera Orchestra and some of our chamber musicians playing together. Alan Gilbert, who is the music director at the opera, is our conductor for this performance. It's only a 6 or 7 minute piece. It's very short. And it's put together because it's such great, great music. And it's the kind of thing that only a festival like ours could do. And so repertoire is selected, and musicians buy into the concept of sometimes playing things they've never played before.
Well, you've touched on a very important point. Even with opera, you do certainly productions that are premieres and also more contemporary productions, which are not as accessible, shall we say?
Well, it's always a challenge, but then Carmen was a challenge the first time it came out, too.
And speaking of Carmen, that was an unusual performance. It was, I believe, the staging was different, or the concept was different. It was a more contemporary updating of the story.
Yeah, this is a Swedish director, Lars Rudolfsson, who wanted to look more at a real... wanted to present the opera as realism, not with the usual glitz and what I call the flamenco red and castanets and swinging skirts. So it's about the relationship of Carmen and Don Jose, and it is set, it's updated nearer to our time, more in the time of Franco, though I don't think it matters what these soldiers are, which regime they belong to, just to give a sense of the authoritarian sense that they give, the feel of there being no freedom for these poor smugglers, gypsies, whatever, who are trying to survive. It's a very different... And then, of course, we had the amazing Anne-Sophie von Otter sing our Carmen.
Yes, that was very, very interesting.
Very interesting. I mean, this
her
is...
Her habanera was beautifully, beautifully
yes,
done.
Sitting in the chair.
wonderful and very, very inward looking and seductive.
Yeah, it's a very different point of view, and not all audience members like this because it's not what you expect. But I think when you come to an opera or to a concert, you have to come with a clean slate, an open mind, and be prepared to like or not like. You have that choice too.
Well, I must say one thing about the freedom of the gypsy. After hearing flamenco and being more involved in it, I can understand the various groups of gypsies. I mean, you have your gypsies who work sometimes, and you have the gypsies who don't want to work, and then there are those who really are the law of the land is really what they live by. And I think that when you learn about flamenco, and I did tie it in with Carmen after I saw, I mean, I know the music of Carmen backwards and forwards, however.
Which is after, not Spanish anyway.
And after seeing the performance, I realized what Carmen was really talking about, the freedom that she was talking about is a kind of freedom that we can't possibly understand. Mm-hmm. The freedom of life on the roads, the freedom of not being held in by anything. The gypsy's concept of freedom, which may not be freedom because you still have to do things in order to survive, but it actually opened up a whole new vista for me as someone who has heard Carmen ever since I was in Glee Club, you know, in grammar
school.
And
also a city person, perhaps.
Yes,
because
that
freedom you talk about, I understand here. I mean, I can go to the opera lecture, sit in and watch it. The next day, we'll go off into the hills and we'll do exactly what Carmen says, the hills.
But her insistence of being free, that I must be free, had so much more depth to me.
Mm. Yeah,
which is kind of interesting. So I guess the more you know, of course, the more you can appreciate. And here we are. Santa Fe does offer, I mean, a very high level of artistic prowess on every level. I mean, visual art, the native, you know, culture, and of course, blending that all together here with these wonderful festivals that are going on, you are very, very fortunate people to be part
of
it.
And just a word on Anne-Sophie Vonnata. She sang Carmen one night, and then she sang this absolutely beautiful recital at the Chamber Music Festival.
And in addition to singing, and the recital is just what you were saying before about choosing to like or not like things. She did a program where only maybe two or three songs on this Lieder recital were familiar to, I'd say, 99% of the audience. The rest were unfamiliar, and in some cases, composers who were unfamiliar. And yet every piece was so beautiful and so beautifully put forward to the audience that everyone loved it. And had you told them they were going to hear a Lieder recital of songs they'd never heard before, they probably would have thought, oh, I'm not going to go to this, but we had a full house, and she sang beautifully, and Bengt Forsberg, the pianist, played
it's
beautifully.
It's quite extraordinary.
And then on top of that, she's also performing in two other chamber music concerts as a chamber music artist, singing some music of Faya and Saint-Saëns and Franck Martin, and also doing the Brahms songs with viola.
And incidentally, releasing a new album of music by ABBA.
Right.
Which is a whole other thing.
Right.
Which is very exciting. So she's covering all her bases. I think they're all doing that.
And I think this issue of crossover is interesting. One example here that the Santa Fe Opera and the Chamber Music Festival share artists through the season. We have these big names in and we can share them. I see this as very healthy, and I think this needs to be done more, that the arts groups need to get together because artists are beginning to cross over. The great Patricia Rassett, who sang in the opera last year, sang almost a blues concert with the Chamber Festival last year.
That was with I think Desert Corral.
Desert Corral, I'm sorry.
And then next year she's singing with us.
Yes, this is something very interesting that some of these singers are doing. Anne-Sophie Vonnata was always classified as a Mozartian classical singer. In fact, she said to me, I have to remember I'm not singing a pantserol, I'm wearing a skirt in Carmen, and she has to move differently. So I think that's an interesting trend, both the fact that artists are crossing over, arts organizations are sharing artists, which is very good.
Hopefully, yes.
Yeah, more of that.
Well, crossover has a negative connotation, or has had. And actually, with my show particularly, I believe that all music emerges from the same place. And music is music, and that's all there is to it. And the more you delve into the basis of what makes music happen, the more you realize that it's the same thing that happens in every genre of music. So what you have here, of course, you have opera, you have chamber music, you also have other, concerts that go on through the year. Now, as far as the next season is concerned, Desiree, you said you were going to give us a little glimpse of what's happening.
Well, it's going to be an interesting season. Our box office hit, which we always have won, it will be La Bohème, which people know and love, and we'll sell out, I assume. We're also the Strauss Opera. John Crosby always presented Richard Strauss in this house, and that continues to a certain extent with the new general director, Richard Gallus. Next year, the opera will be Daphne, which is a wonderful mythical story, which will be lovely in this setting. And then two operas I'm very excited about coming to grips with, because I always wait to see what I'm going to have to work on the next year. One is an opera by the French composer Rameau called Platé, and this is going to be a humorous opera. It's about a frog who is a girl, but sung by a man. Already there's a little sort of sense of parody here of pants rolls. We call it a petticoat roll. and this is a humorous piece. It'll be marvelous because the director, Laurent Pelly, this wonderful French director who did La Belle Hélène and who directs this summer...
The Tempest.
No, not The Tempest.
Cendrillon.
Cendrillon. And Laurent Pelly, who is directing Cendrillon by Massenet, will be directing that. And then an opera I'm absolutely intrigued to see, it's been done in this country before, is by Tan Dun.
Oh, yes.
Tea, A Mirror of the Soul.
That will be fabulous.
I've seen the DVD of this, and it's almost a Zen-like piece. Mm. And we have done a number of pieces in this sort of mode, I suppose, with Kaya Sarriaho's L'Amour de Loin, which is about love from afar, of the knight and the lady, and how that love and longing, it's a wonderful theme. And Aina de Mar last year, which
yes,
also presented a very meditative end to that opera.
Okay.
And this is, I suppose, in that same genre. I would encourage people, if they're going to come and see the Tan Dun, to get that DVD and see it ahead of time. He actually conducts on that DVD.
Yeah. His work, music
is intriguing,
is
and
it's
not
intriguing.
Easy. It's not easily accessible.
No,
it's different, and I think you owe it to yourself to be somewhat familiar with that sound, which is very Japanese.
And the instruments are.
Yes,
as well.
So I think it would be. I think it would be an interesting season, as always.
Well, we look forward to it, and thank you so much for finding time to speak with me and bring your story to our audience in Philadelphia, and of course. Steve, we look forward to the new series here on WRTI.
Thank you. It'll be 13 weeks of great chamber music concerts.
Maybe the beginning of a trend. Let's hope so.
I hope so. Come back and see us, Jill.
We'd love it. Thank
you
so much.
Bye.